Blog Talk Radio.
It's ridiculous.
Good evening, hockey fans, and welcome to another edition of the Pens Nation Radio Show. I am Andy Hughes, and I am joined by my co-hosts Nick Richter and Joe Depto. How you doing tonight, fellas?
I'm about to shoot somebody tonight.
How's that?
Some guy is going around door to door through my neighborhood trying to sell educational books, and it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and I'm like, I've got a radio show to do. Get off my porch.
It's ridiculous.
It's completely ridiculous.
Dude. Get off my lawn.
Say hello to Smith and Wesson, Jag. I'm not playing around, kid.
Get off my lawn. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. Once again,
in a bad mood.
We are on the air again tonight. We'll be on until 11 o'clock. You can call in to the show at 347-202-0344. You can talk about anything. We talked a lot last night about the Stahls, the Sutters, the Suitors, the Parises. All that stuff is fair game here on the show. So 347-202-0344.
The Shens, the Kostitsyns.
Yeah. The Hughes.
Any other brothers out there?
Deptos, the Wills. You can also tweet us at the Pens Nation. It's another way to interact with us. We're actually going to have Chip Alexander, who covers the Carolina Hurricanes for the Rally News and Observer. He's the beat writer for the Hurricanes, so he'll give us a little different perspective on the Jordan Stahl trade and how Carolina fans think about it and what, you know, Chip feels covering the Hurricanes, and I'm sure that'll be a very interesting interview because he is a very well-respected man among the league. He's always on a lot of radio shows, does a tremendous job. Great guy to follow on Twitter. You can follow him at ice_chip. Just some great stuff from Chip Alexander. He'll be coming up around 10:15. So right now is a great time to call in, but we might as well start here. I wanted to talk a little bit about this because we kind of missed it last night. Today it was reported by TSN the talks on the new NHL CBA are going to begin Friday in New York. So that's definitely a huge great thing to see, and apparently I'm cutting out.
No, you're fine. It's just okay. Like a dip in volume every now and then. You're all right.
Okay. But yeah, they're going to start the talks on Friday. That's very good news because I know a lot of fans, including myself, are a little worried about maybe a possible lockout, but obviously, we don't have the details or anything, but hopefully they can work this deal out. And it's good to see that they're finally starting talks. I know a lot of people were worried that maybe that they were going to go much even longer without even starting these talks. So encouraging to see them start on Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been the elephant in the room for some time now, and I we can talk about free agency, we can talk about trades. We can talk about all these things. You know, it's the one thing that I think unites hockey fans, whether you're Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, anywhere across the NHL, America, Canada, whatever. The main thing that none of us want to see is an NHL lockout. I mean, you look at the last couple decades, and this isn't even the first or second time that we've been in a situation to where we could see a work stoppage or a shortened season or anything like that. This has happened multiple times now, and I'm really not sure that pro hockey could survive another year off or another work stoppage like that. So this is, you know, their backs are up against the wall, and I think there's a lot of people that know that they've got a lot of money to lose. And I think worst case scenario is we see a shortened season.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel, you know, the first lockout, I think there was a lot of issues to kind of be worked out, and I think it did kind of benefit the league a little bit, you know, with the salary cap and everything, and that helped a lot of teams, especially the Penguins, able to compete. But you don't really have that feeling this time around because, you know, I think the league revenues are up. Attendance is pretty good. You know, you got the big TV contract. There's really no reason why they should have a stoppage here. I mean, they got a lot of things going for them. So I feel that this is a lot different situation this time around than the lockout before.
Yeah. I mean, the NHL, in terms of finances, they're doing better than they ever have. I mean, are their teams struggling? Yeah. I mean, both the teams in the Stanley Cup Finals were in ownership flux during the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, you're not going to see that really in most other sports, but at the same time, you know, it's like you said, attendance is going up, the TV's going up. I mean, it's to the point where ESPN, who they've kind of shunned hockey for years now, they're actually being forced to talk about it on a regular nightly basis on SportsCenter because of the fan interest, especially from the casual side. Hockey fans are, you know, they're the intense and most craziest fans in sports. I've always said that. But it's the casual fans that only had a real slight interest in the NHL before, but now they've actually got a vested interest on a night-in and night-out basis. They're watching it so much on a regular basis now. And I think, you know, there was so much that happened with the NFL lockout, the shortened season in the NBA, the questionable officiating in the NBA, you know, all these sorts of things. I mean, the NHL is at a better spot than it really has been in a long time. And I think the owners know that. I think that they know that if they were in a situation to where they had a shortened season or anything, or these types of lockouts and work stoppages, they became a rudimentary type deal, I think it would push away so many fans that they're going to get something done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least I hope that is the case. You know, the thing that gives me a little bit of an unsettled feeling about the whole thing is the way the players' union kind of came out against the schedule change and kind of bucked that system. It kind of showed their teeth just a little bit on that. They'd still get paid. I mean, this is kind of guaranteed money they're talking. They could afford to kind of sit out a little longer than, let's say, the owners, per se, have the chance to do. So, yeah, I don't know. I hope everything kind of gets resolved quickly, but, I mean, you just never know what's going to set someone off a little bit. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some other NHL news, the 2012 Hall of Fame class was announced. Matt Sundin, Joe Sakic, Adam Oates, and Pavel Bure. Some great players there, especially Joe Sakic.
They're great players, man.
Joe Sakic, great player.
I didn't get to do that.
With the Avalanche. And I know a lot of people, yeah, I know a lot of people didn't want Jeremy Roenick to make it, and it looks like he didn't, so.
I wonder if he cried.
Oh, man. Hashtag did Jeremy cry. Courtesy of Ashley Langlois, who is joining us now.
I didn't get to do that, man. I was in the first five ballot.
Unfortunately, I do think that the NHL with this Hall of Fame stuff, I think they kind of missed the boat a little bit. I mean, why is Pat Burns not in the Hall of Fame?
I don't know.
No one can give me a good reason why Pat Burns is not in the Hall of Fame.
That's because there isn't a good reason.
Is he American?
No.
I think next year it's got to be Pat Burns and Fred Shiro both get in.
Yeah, I think Fred Shiro deserves to be in too.
Yeah.
He did in the 70s with those guys in Philadelphia. That was a special, special team.
Well, and it's funny because they really lobbied to get Pat Burns in. Oh my goodness, was it 2 years ago when it came out that he had, you know, that he didn't have very long to go? They really, really pushed it. I know up here, Hockey Night Canada had a campaign and they were really, really pushing for it. And then he just
push it good.
He didn't get in. And it hasn't really been revisited since. But like you said, Joe, like there really isn't a good reason as to why he's not in there yet.
Yeah, that was a sad day when he passed, and it's a shame that his coaching legacy alone, you know, has him deserving to be there. But the fact that, you know, that he has passed, I think that's, you know, his legacy comes to the forefront a little bit more, and it's a shame that they didn't recognize that.
I'm actually making my first trip to the Hall of Fame July 3rd, July 4th, so that should be interesting.
And Ronan's going to cry because he didn't get to do that, man.
Oh, you'll get to go see the hockey dreams that didn't die.
Yeah, I still won't get that old slogan. I don't know where
terrific commercials.
I don't understand that whole thing.
It's ridiculous.
What were you thinking?
Surreal upbeat set of commercials. Some hockey dreams die. Come and see the ones that didn't at the Hockey Hall of Fame.
They whine about this stuff all the time, and look what happens.
I think Tortorella's on our show more than anyone.
It's possible.
He has an appearance every single show.
I love it.
It's a brilliant slogan when you think about it, because I mean, Ashley, you can probably back me up for this. Has there really ever been a young male that's grown up in Canada that didn't want to play hockey in the NHL?
I can't think of it.
Her brother.
Yeah, well, my brother, he's the exception to the rule. My dad registered him. He bought him the equipment. He took him out to the ice rink. He took him to, you know, his first practice, and my brother sat in the corner and refused to do anything. So,
well, Scott Howson will be offering him a contract soon.
he's a big kid, too. He's like, you know, my brother's probably a good 200 pounds. He's almost 6 feet tall. He'd be perfect.
I replied.
But you know what? There hasn't. I think every little kid, and you could even go so far as to say now, it's not even just little boys and little girls. You know, they're out there, they're playing street hockey, they're pretending that they're, you know, scoring that Stanley Cup winning goal.
Yeah.
And the dream is to get to the NHL and then get to the Hockey Hall of Fame. So it is a really brilliant sort of ad campaign.
I guess Colby Armstrong made it to the NHL.
That was mean.
Little girls do dream about making it.
Hockey dreams die. The ones that only get rotated meet Matt Cook's elbow.
Well, we talked a little bit about the Hall of Fame inductees, Adam Oates. He had a pretty big day. He was named the new Capitals coach and was inducted to the Hall of Fame. He's never coached at the professional level yet.
All right, he'll get fired on his wedding day.
After Dale Hunter doesn't even spend a full season with the Caps, Adam Oates is the new man, and he worked as an assistant coach with the Lightning in 2009 and 2010. So that'll be interesting to see. But quite a day for Mr. Oates.
Was that under Melrose?
What?
Yeah.
Was that under Melrose?
Was it?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it was.
I'm not sure.
Wow.
I'm waiting for the over-under on NHL.com headlines to have Hall and Oates.
The great headlines they have. Just wonderful.
Coming.
Wow.
Man. This is where you play the cricket sound effect.
Actually, this is probably where we call Chip Alexander. Save the day, Chip.
that'll be coming.
No, Oates wasn't part of Melrose.
Was it?
Nah, Melrose was 2008.
Man.
It was promptly fired with a 5-7-4 record.
Man. Yeah, well, we'll see what Adam Oates can do. I mean, Dale Hunter clearly worked with what he was doing with the Caps for at least a little bit. As you saw, Ovechkin not playing as much because they tried to focus on defense. I'm interested to see what Adam Oates does with that team and the star in Ovechkin there.
No comment.
Comments. No comment.
At Alex Ovechkin. It will be interesting to see. I thought Hunter did a pretty decent job of calling people on the internet.
Hello.
Hey, is this Chip Alexander?
You got him.
Hey, Chip, how you doing? It's Andy Hughes.
Hey, doing fine.
Well, thank you for joining us today. I'm here with my co-hosts as well, Nick Richter, Ashley Langua, and Joe Depto.
Okay.
What's going on, Chip?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well.
Thanks for doing this.
So you guys got quite the player down there in Jordan Stahl, huh?
Yeah, I think everybody down here is pretty excited about it, obviously, and excited to see the, you know, both the Stahls playing with each other. So it should be interesting.
You know, I'm assuming that you were at the draft. What was your initial reaction? Were you kind of surprised by that at all? I mean, I know that there have been a lot of chatter before, and we know that Stahl had rejected that 10-year, $60 million offer from the Penguins. Were you surprised at all, and what was really your first reaction when the trade was announced?
Well, you know, I'd heard for a couple of hours leading up to the actual moment when it was announced that I'd been talking with Jim Rutherford, the general manager of the Hurricanes, and kind of got an inkling that something was going on, and he was talking with Ray Shero and there at, you know, at the arena. And obviously I was talking to some of the other Pittsburgh reporters and kind of believed that something really might be going down. And I mean, Jim Rutherford was missing at his table until the moment the draft started, and you could kind of sense that maybe it might be happening. And the only thing was that there seemed to be a sense that the Penguins were looking for a defenseman, you know, a top-flight defenseman, and that kind of took the idea of maybe a Brandon Sutter might not be in the package for the Hurricanes. But then once Bettman announced the deal and heard Brandon Sutter, I think that was the surprising part of it. You know, I knew that obviously the Hurricanes would put the draft pick up. I knew there would probably be a prospect involved, which turned out to be Brian Dublin. And then, but the fact that it was Brandon Sutter was the most surprising part.
Yeah, and Pens fans seemingly went crazy for the Brian Dumoulin part of that announcement. It was just like some cheers, a lot more cheers, and then when they announced Brian's name in that trade, people went crazy like they just got, like, Wayne Gretzky on their team or something, and no one knows who this guy is yet. Can you tell us a little bit about Brian?
Well, I think the part of it was they were probably pretty happy they actually got another piece in the trade because it seemed like, obviously, the Hurricanes might have a lot of leverage in that situation. But, yeah, Brian Dumoulin played at Boston College. He was a second-round draft pick, very highly thought of by the Hurricanes. And Boston College won a couple of national championships. He's a big kid, 6'3", 6'4", about 220 pounds, very physical-type player. And, you know, I wouldn't say that the Hurricanes were, thought that he might be in the start, you know, in the lineup or on the roster this year. It might be a year in which he played in the American Hockey League and perhaps got called up, at some point during the season. But I know that he was a prospect they were very high on. So, you know, I think that's an interesting part of the whole package. And, you know, the biggest part, obviously, is Brandon Sutter. Here's a guy that's only 23 years old and just an awfully good player who's only going to get better. And, he's the kind of guy that can score some goals, too. I mean, you know, I've been asked a number of times what do you think is up, you know, his potential is offensively, and I think he can score between 20 and 30 goals given the right situation. So it's a pretty good deal for the Penguins.
Now, before the trade happened here, obviously the day before it was announced that Stahl rejected the contract offers, and there seemed to be a lot of rumbling throughout most of the summer that he was going to go, Stahl would leave town, and it would most likely be the Hurricanes. Did you guys get the same sense and the feeling from that as well throughout the summer, that going into his final year with the Penguins, if they couldn't get him re-signed, that he would end up in Carolina?
Yeah, I did. And I don't think it was a big secret. Obviously, the Hurricanes couldn't publicly talk about him, but just through the back channels and the things you were hearing, you got the sense that if he did play one more year with the Penguins and then become a UFA after next year, that the Hurricanes were going to be very aggressive in going after him. And certainly he had, he and Nairn Stahl are very, very close. I mean, even for brothers, they're very tightly, have a very tight bond. And, And certainly there had been some rumblings that he would, you know, be very receptive to signing with the Hurricanes as a free agent. If it came to that, obviously I think the Penguins would have tried to move him at some point next year. But once the Shiro began to talk in terms of perhaps something happening this year and being receptive to a trade, I think the Hurricanes were pretty aggressive then as well. And the first communications were made between the GMs. And, you know, it all did come together pretty fast, though, on Friday night. I think Jim Rutherford met with Shiro about 5:15, and they really hammered that deal out right until 7 o'clock. So, but it was something that I think both sides realized. I think the Penguins realized they weren't going to be able to keep Ball, obviously, and I think the Hurricanes felt like they were in the best position to get him, and they were able to find some common ground. And I can tell you right now, the Hurricanes did not want to give up Brandon Sutter, but, you know, everybody said, to get something, you got to get something up.
Yeah, I think a lot of Pens fans are kind of worried about Brandon Sutter. Is it going to be a far drop-off after Jordan Staal? I don't think so. I think Brandon Sutter is probably going to come at him like a spider monkey this season and just play a really great season. He's really good defensively, and I think that's a really underrated part of his game, wouldn't you say?
No, I think everybody there is going to be pleasantly surprised with Brandon Sutter. You know, he's not as big as Jordan. He's still maturing physically. Very smart player. I'd say his hockey IQ is probably as high or higher than anybody on the Hurricanes, always on the right side of the puck, you know, centered the checking line, did a lot of the gritty work, really good on the PK, and probably deserved a little more time on the power play, good hands, good instinct. So I really believe, I mean, I know Jordan Staal scored 25 goals, played 62 games, but I really believe that Brandon Sutter can be one of those guys who will score in the 20s goal-wise and do all the other little things, you know, special teams in the other parts of the game that will make him a very valuable player in that lineup. But I think the transition into the Penguins lineup will be a pretty seamless one.
Chip, it was reported, you know, before the Jordan Staal was traded to Carolina that he rejected a 10-year offer worth $6 million per year. How far along are the Carolina Hurricanes in contract discussions with Jordan Staal, and what kind of contract do you think he's going to be expecting to get from Jim Rutherford?
Well, it's kind of, they're in the initial stages now. I talked to Jim Rutherford today, and he talked with Jordan's agent last night. It's his first initial conversation, really. And, you know, it's kind of hard to negotiate with somebody when your client is on his honeymoon. So it's kind of an unusual circumstance there. But obviously, you know, I'm sure Jordan's kept abreast of everything that's going on. It's probably – Jim Rutherford said he was optimistic today that they could get a contract completed in, say, about 2 or 3 weeks. But both sides seem to be conducive to the point, you know, that they'll be able to work this thing out. Now, how long it'll be, I do not know. I would think he's certainly in position to be getting that, you know, $6 million a year, $5 to $6 million a year. And I would say, you know, his brother Eric had a long-term contract that still has 4 years left on it. So that may be a starting point, 4 to 5 years for Jordan, or it may be longer. It could be a six-year contract. So, but all that still will be hammered out, and they're just in the initial stages right now.
When the reports came out, you know, like I was just talking about, when Staal rejected that big contract, you know, 10 years, he had just got done, you know, making a couple statements to the press about how much he loved Pittsburgh and wanted to stay there. When he turned down a 10-year deal worth $60 million, did that decrease his trade value in any way in Carolina's eyes?
Well, I don't think so. I had a hard time myself coming to grips with exactly what the Penguins were doing there. I mean, I didn't know if you know, they were offering this 10-year deal to kind of soothe the fans, when knowing that they probably were going to trade him, and then they could go back to their fans and say, look, we did everything we could, you know, to keep him here, offering him a 10-year deal, knowing that he already had basically told them, I want to play, you know, next year and see how it goes and then test the waters. Obviously, it was a big package, a lot of money, but at the same time, I think there might have been some PR involved there. And but, you know, certainly I think by that point, Jordan Staal had already decided and let it be known to the Penguins that was the plan that he wanted to continue on, which was to play through next year. And he you know, and things could change. It could have changed next year, which was the gamble the Hurricanes would have taken if they had waited a year. Some people say, why didn't they just wait till next year? I mean, Sidney Crosby could have gotten another concussion, you know, or Jordan could have been injured. There are a number of things that could have happened, and a team like the New York Rangers could have come in and offered him a lot of money next year. He could have been traded to another team, and that's something the Hurricanes didn't want to take a chance on, so they went ahead and worked this deal. So, you know, I think in the end, you know, everybody talks about, is this going to be a win-win for both sides? I really think it probably will be.
Now, the Hurricanes are kind of reminding me of last year's Buffalo Sabres, where they kind of got the green light to go ahead and spend and kind of make a team a contender. It's looking like Carolina's kind of doing the same thing right now. Is that kind of in the plans for this year? Do they think that they have a legitimate chance to get into the Stanley Cup playoffs and go deep, or do you think it's a 2 or 3 year plan right now?
No, I think they're doing everything they can after missing the playoffs the last 3 years. I think they're doing everything they can to get into the playoffs next year. You're looking, you know, at key players like Eric Staal and Cam Ward, who are hitting the primes of their career, 26, 27 years old. And I feel like that the plan for the Hurricanes is if they can add a couple of key pieces, and we're not saying they have to bring in a Zach Parise or something like that, but if they can find a scoring winger that they can add to the lineup and a, you know, a veteran defenseman, a gritty stay-at-home defenseman to help on the back end, that they certainly could be a playoff-type team. You know, people forget that not this past season, but 2 years ago, they went into the final game of the season with a chance to go to the playoffs and lost the game. And had they won that game and gone to the playoffs 2 years ago, so much would have looked differently about the team. But when you miss the playoffs 3 years in a row, there's pressure on management to make something happen. And you know, you just don't want your key players, your core players, such as a Cam Ward or Eric Staal, to be getting up 29, 30 years old and having this playoff 4 or 5 years in a row and say that you're still rebuilding. So, no, I think the plan is to do it now.
Now, you had mentioned that they would be looking for a defenseman, a gritty defenseman. Have there been any rumors about Ryan Suter?
Well, I think they're going to be a part of those sweepstakes. There are going to be a lot of teams that are involved in that. Certainly, I think they'll put an offer in. Now, whether, you know, they can match some of the bigger market teams or some of the bigger offers, I don't know how that's going to play out. They also, you know, they have two defensemen, veteran guys, Brian Allen being one of them, and Yaros Fajic, who are, you know, they'll be UFAs on Sunday. And they're still in negotiations with them as well. So, and Brian Allen was a player who came in from Florida last year and is well-respected in the locker room and a guy that they may look to keep, too. And you know, Yaros Fajic once played with Kirk Muller way back when, so he's a pretty popular guy in the room, too. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see just how active they are on Sunday once free agency begins, because I'm told that there are just not going to be that many key players out there that are going to be available.
Chip, you mentioned Brian Allen. He was a name that a lot of the people who are big into trade rumors, his name kind of was brought up and connected to Pittsburgh back at the trade deadline. What are the situations with his contract, and do you think there's a chance he could test free agency and maybe, you know, get a look for some other clubs once July 1st?
Well, I think he definitely will. Oh yeah, I think he's going to test free agency on Sunday for a fact. And now, you know, he's had some knee issues. He's getting some age on him now. He's still a big physical guy who can, you know, get the job done. He's not a first pairing type guy, but he can certainly, you know, he can lock some minutes, and he's willing to drop the gloves. So he's just a very valuable guy, very, you know, very popular in the room, kind of guy. He was a player representative for the Hurricanes, and I think come Sunday he's going to be the kind of guy a number of teams will be looking at. Fajic's a little older, and maybe it's at the point maybe he signs one more contract for a year, that kind of thing. But I think Brian Allen is more of a valuable commodity.
One more question I wanted to ask you, Chip, is it kind of, you know, Carolina is one of my personal favorite markets to go to a game. I've just always kind of been a sucker. I love the atmosphere, you know, around the arena. I mean, you know, not a lot of places you can tailgate and eat good barbecue before watching a hockey game. You know, talk a little bit about that for our listeners that aren't familiar with it down there, because that's one of my 5 favorite games to go down there. I always, whenever I see the NHL schedule, I'm always thinking to myself, man, I want to go fast on to Carolina and just check out a game there, because I just love that atmosphere. It's so unique.
Well, I think the whole, you know, the way the arena is constructed next to the football stadium with all the parking that's available there makes it conducive to tailgating, and obviously that's something that's big, especially in the South and at football games, and I think it just carried over to hockey once they moved into the arena in 1999, and certainly when they first got into the playoffs, that it had been going on during the regular season, and I think a lot of the the NHL media, you know, saw it happening for the first time when they came in for the playoffs in a lot of cases, or maybe some of the regular season games, but there was a lot more of the real extravagant tailgating going on during the playoffs. So, yeah, it is kind of unique. I haven't seen it in Newark. I haven't seen it in Ottawa. I haven't seen it in a couple of different places, but I think it is a part of the appeal of hockey in the South. You don't see it in Tampa either or some of the other places, so it is kind of unique to the Raleigh area.
All right, Chip. Well, we thank you for coming on. Really, really appreciate you coming on here. Always enjoy your work on Twitter and when you're on the radio, everything you do. Just a fantastic job. And thanks again for coming on tonight and spending some time with us.
All right, guys. Enjoy it. See you now.
All right.
Thanks, Chip.
Thanks, Chip.
See you, Chip.
And that was Chip Alexander, the beat writer, the Carolina Hurricanes beat writer for the Raleigh News and Observer. Some interesting comments there. A different perspective, if you will, from our usual perspective. He's doing it from the Carolina perspective. So he's gained Jordan Staal. He's gotten rid of Brandon Sutter. And he had a lot of good things to say about Brandon Sutter. And I know Jim Rutherford was, I think, a day or two before the draft. He was quoted saying, you know, he was kind of reluctant to deal Sutter, so that kind of tells you what kind of player that they thought he was, and he had to have been hard to get rid of, but they did get a good player in Jordan Staal.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the thing that he touched on that I would certainly agree with the most is when he said that, you know, this deal will be looked back on as a win-win for both teams. I couldn't agree more for that, because I think that it was, you know, it kind of was unofficially made known that Jordan Staal was going to test free agency next summer and probably walk away from Pittsburgh, maybe leaving them empty-handed. And the fact that they could get a real good two-way player in Brandon Sutter, who can fill that role real nicely, can do a lot for the PK. They got a great defensive prospect that kind of adds a little bit more beef on the back end instead of the typical offensive and two-way guys they've been drafting lately. And then they got a real high pick that allowed them to get Derek Pouliot. So getting two picks, you know, just with the two defensemen, Pouliot and Dumoulin, they really just turned that defense, which is already stacked, into a stronghold, and they kept the position of the third line center, you know, a real strong one, kept them strong down the middle for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Sutter can bring to the Penguins. We got about 27 minutes left, so we're open the phone lines up again. The number is 347-202-0344. Plenty of time to call in. One thing I wanted to touch on, I started on thepensnation.com starting to do the unrestricted free agent profiles, and today's was Steve Sullivan. Wanted to get your guys' take on if you think Sullivan should be back. I know Dave Molinari had reported that he may be the best bet to return out of all the pending unrestricted free agents, and those include Aaron Asham, Richard Park, guys like that. Do you guys see Steve Sullivan coming back? Do you want him to come back? Because I think if he does come back, it may have to be a little less than what he had. I mean, you know, he's not getting any younger. But I thought he did a great job on the power play. Maybe you would like to seen him more, or seen more out of him on 5-on-5 play. But I thought he was pretty good on the power play for the Penguins. So what do you guys think about Sullivan?
Kind of have a little bit of a mixed emotion on it. Like what he brought to the power play was absolutely incredible for the Pens this past year, after having just a miserable power play for the past couple years before that. If you bring him back merely for that fact, I don't know if that's really the right move to do. And there are some other players out there that could bring the Penguins a little more, especially 5-on-5 than Steve Sullivan did. But if you bring him back for some veteran leadership and just some spot power play duty, I wouldn't have a problem with it if the price is right. It would it would have to be about half what he was making last year, because he's going to be playing about half as much if he comes back with the Pens. Other guys I would like to see maybe in place of Steve Sullivan would be like a P.A. Parento or somebody like that, who's also on the unrestricted free agent market. Adding that to the top six with the Penguins, especially if they get Parisi, could just be unbelievable.
Well, it's unfortunate that I have to say this, because first off, Steve Sullivan is just the classiest of the class. I mean, he's a great guy. There's no one that has a single bad thing to say about him. That being said, at this point in his career, he's getting ready to crack 40 years old. Last year, he scored 17 goals and made $1.5 million. Usually, you get a winger for $1.5 million in the NHL, and they put up 48 points. It's a really good thing. The problem is with Steve Sullivan is that he can't play below the top six. If you put him in the third line or the fourth line, he can't really suffice in a checking line role, which is really unfortunate. And for that reason, and the Penguins are probably going to be trying to, value every penny they can on the cap. I'm not really sure there's any amount of money that I would want to bring Steve Sullivan back for, because I don't think that his skill set fits the Penguins roster where they're trying to go. They're trying to get a wing for Sidney Crosby. They're trying to keep Malkin and Neal intact, and they're trying to keep a third line of Matt Cook and Brandon Sutter together. I'm just not sure where Steve Sullivan fits in that. Unfortunately, Nick and I really disagree about P.A. Parento, because I think that guy, he's the next guy waiting, Ville Leino type contract, just waiting to get overpaid. And I think you give that guy a big-time contract, whether it's cap hit or length, I think you're bringing a big dumpster fire to your, cap each year.
The thing that kind of holds his cap salary back this season are the other guys that are out there via trade and via free agency, like Bobby Ryan, Zach Parise, Rick Nash. The list kind of goes on. There's a lot more out there than last year's unrestricted free agent class. Ville Leino was top three in that class last year. You could probably argue top two for a lot of teams. P.A. Parento is kind of a little bit farther down on that list.
Well, in terms of where he scored last year, he only scored two less points than Zach Parise did last season. But I know what you're saying. I know what you're getting at. But I think, the two contracts, if I'm an NHL GM that I'm not touching, are P.A. Parento and Alex Semin. To me, I'm not touching either one of those guys. And when you've got there's another couple of guys on there, say Detroit, they're not able to work something out with Jiri Hudler. He's a former 40-goal scorer. He'd be a great fit. Even if you could get him for a right price, and I say that with, finances being factored in, Olli Jokinen could even be, a decent choice if the price is right. But then again, I'm not sure how much he's really going to command. I bet there's somebody that's going to want Peter's score back. I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah.
He did score 21 last year, though, in a bottom six role. So
Hudler's never scored 40 goals, by the way.
I thought he did.
No, he's topped out at 25. Maybe in the KHL when he left for a couple years.
That's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking in the KHL. Sorry about that.
40 in the KHL is like 100 in the NHL.
That's about right.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. No, he's a heck of a player. Actually, I would love a guy like Jiri Hudler on our team. However, he doesn't really bring what I think the Pens really need on their wings or down the middle right now. And you can't really have him as a fourth-line center either. He's a little beyond that. I think the Pens need a little more size if they get something on the wings. Hudler, 5'10", doesn't really do it.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking the names when I say a name like that, I'm thinking if the Penguins don't get Zach Parise, if you're going by the size thing, and I totally agree with, especially that second line, even if they did get Parise, there still is a gaping slot on that second line left wing or right wing, whichever. The opposite wing of where James Neal is going to play. At that point, maybe even a Damon Lankow would be all right, because he's got some veteran leadership. He's got a little bit of size. It's going to be tough, and I think you're going to see a signing similar to what Shiro did with Steve Sullivan. Not a big name, not a real expensive contract, but something that theoretically fits in well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
Renner's another one. that I would consider.
Yeah. Zach Parise actually spoke a little bit. I think he was on NHL Home Ice today. And a lot of people were making kind of a big deal out of his comments. He was quoted as saying, if that does happen, my agents have done a really good job of doing the best they can to prepare me for it. But first and foremost, we want to try and get things worked out with New Jersey. And a lot of people took that quote as if, you know, he's just going to sign with New Jersey. And I think it just kind of shows how that quote kind of shows how Parise is. You know, he's not one of those guys that's going to say, yeah, you know, I want out. You know, when he goes out, he'll do it a classy way. So I didn't take too much out of that quote. And, you know, New Jersey is definitely still a player in it, but I don't know. I would think that he would have to at least try to test the waters, because he even said New Jersey's, they're not out even if he goes to on Sunday. So I think he'll definitely test the free agent waters. There's no way that, you know, he's just going to sign before, because let's face it, an offer to be on Sidney Crosby's wing is a pretty big offer, and he's going to get a lot of money thrown at him. So he might as well, you know, look at all the options while he can.
I would be really surprised if Zach Parise stays in New Jersey.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. I just don't see that with the money they've got tied up in Kovalchuk and the contract they're going to have to give Adam Henry coming up, and Josephson and you know, some of their other players and even Larson and stuff
and
like
Brodeur.
That. I was going to say, in the goalie situation, they got, you know, they've had two goalies almost at the age of 40 and no one to replace them yet. So, I don't see him coming back.
Yeah, no one really in the pipeline to sign as a goalie. So,
and that's a big. Yeah. I mean, New Jersey fans have to be a little concerned about this, because they'll still have Kovalchuk, but I don't know if Kovalchuk can do it all himself. I mean, that's nothing against Kovalchuk. But
this is where that contract kind of comes back to bite him a bit.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I disagree. I totally disagree.
Well, it's not
it
the biggest of cap hits, but it's just forever long, and it's going to be on the books until he's dead.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's certainly true. But I think, in my opinion, and again, I'm just going by strictly my opinion, is Zach Parise and Ilya Kovalchuk are the two best wings in the league to me. So I think you're getting a truly elite player at a very manageable cap hit. I mean, what Kovalchuk gets you on a cap hit per year? You take a look at what, you know, some of these guys get overpaid to have. I mean, look at Buffalo. We were just talking about, you know, Ville Leino. Look at Buffalo and the contract that they gave, you know, Ville Leino and Christian Ehrhoff. Now that is a problem. $4.5 million until 2017, or, you know, a deal like that, to me, that is a cap casualty when you take a look at that and what that can wreck your team. At least Kovalchuk, at least you're getting an elite player, you know, in the bulk of his prime when you do a deal like that.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people claiming Minnesota Wild may have a chance that they're going to offer him this huge contract. And I know he's from Minnesota. Do you guys think that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think he has much of a chance. I mean, you know, I don't know. Playing for Mike Yeo, Minnesota, I don't know. Penguins or Minnesota, I think I know where I would go.
Yeah, it's not the most competitive team in the West to go to. If you're going to go anywhere out West, is Minnesota really the logistical spot to go?
You know, he wants to get that cup.
Yeah, and I mean, that's players of his ilk, that's what they want. You know, they want the chance year in and year out for the cup. And he's 27 now. Is he going to get that in the next 5 to 6 years at all in Minnesota? Probably not.
Yeah, especially, you know, we were just talking about cap problems and things like that. You take a look at Minnesota's cap situation, and they're not really in a position to win right away. I mean, you're talking Kyle Brodziak, $2.8 million, Devin Setoguchi. He hasn't really delivered. You know, Danny Heatley still got that 7.5 deal. Matt Collins making 3. Pierre-Marc Bouchard's making 4. I mean, they've got a lot of – Tom Gilbert's making 4. They've got a lot of inflated contracts for guys that just aren't delivering for, you know, those type of cap hits. I know guys want to go home and they want to be, you know, they're a sucker for that sort of thing. But to me, you want to win a championship, go play, you know, 4 or 5 years in Pittsburgh, because you'll get another shot at another big contract when your deal's up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just really looking forward to Sunday. I think a lot of people are just ready for it to be Sunday. Right now, I mean, who would have thought, you know, last year was pretty crazy with the whole Yager thing, but man, I'm starting to get pumped maybe even more about this thing. I don't know. Parise and Yager. I think I'll take Parise over that, but I don't know. It's just really, really exciting. I can't wait to do it. And we'll be on for 3 hours again, like we were last year on July 1st, which is probably one of the most memorable shows we ever had for a number of reasons.
Too, yeah, that was a great one.
Oh, man, that's a classic. And Zach Clark has to call in again. Hopefully he won't be angry, though. We were all angry.
I think I'm in the minority here, but am I the only one who was kind of interested in what Yager does this offseason?
Yep.
Yeah, I can't help it. I'm infatuated with the man. My man crush on Yager will never die. I want it to die. I want it to go away, but it won't. I can't help it. I want him to come in the Western Conference because I live in Columbus, so I want to be able to see him on a regular basis.
Maybe he'll sign with Rick Nash.
Yeah, I wish. I wish he would come to Columbus and I can hang out with him.
Do you have a casino there?
I'll set up like a fake craps table in my living room. Yager hang out with me. If he wins, I'll give him a copy of NHL 12. If he loses, he has to sign everything in my house.
Yager. Yeah, that's another story to follow, I guess. I don't, hasn't been really much that's come out ever since he said that he was going to test the waters. We haven't heard anything from Svoboda, so I guess that's good, maybe. There was way too much of that last year. Too much.
I heard the Islanders might have some interest in at least calling him and seeing what's up.
It was the Islanders made an offer for somebody. I forget who it was.
Oh.
Rick DiPietro?
No.
Bobby Ryan.
Was it Bobby Ryan?
It was all their draft picks or something.
Basically, all their draft picks for Bobby Ryan.
Yeah, that was interesting for the, what was it, for Ryan Murray. They offered all the draft picks. Ridiculous. Was that, like, true, or is that just, like, a rumor?
I don't know, but if that's true, and if I were Columbus, what the heck, I would do it.
My goodness. There's never been a trade.
It was such a deep draft.
Aaron Portsline verified it the other day. It was the reason why Columbus turned it down. And to an extent, on the surface, it was for money. You know, they didn't think that they could afford all these draft picks. But, okay, you can get the draft picks, and then you can trade them after you get them. You don't have to keep them. You can trade them and package your pick with the Islanders' pick.
Why couldn't somebody tell Scott Housen that?
I'm pretty sure Scott Housen is like...
His next career is an ice cream truck driver. I'm pretty convinced of it.
Yeah, right. He would sign up for the ice cream truck job in St. Louis and would deliver the bottle rockets in Duluth, South Dakota or something like that.
Just aimlessly wandering the hillside.
Oh, my goodness.
I can't imagine... Like, just getting that offer. Oh, we're going to offer you every single draft pick we have. Here you go.
You think that happened to the Penguins in 84?
For Lemieux?
Yeah. We'll give you every single draft pick.
You would never do that. Ryan Murray is no Mario Lemieux, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, but that would be...
Yeah, I'm sure they got
to see that. Something that they got, like, Edmonton was, like, in their primes, like, you know what, we'll give you every draft pick we have.
Everyone.
Every single one. We want Lemieux with Gretzky. That's it. Like they'll win for 30 straight years.
Well, speaking of all the draft picks, we got to catch up a little bit with Olli Maatta, the Penguins defenseman. He was picked 22nd overall, and he was top 10 ranked. He was ranked the 8th best North American skater, but he fell down to the Penguins at 22nd, a pretty good steal there, I would say. Going to be a great defenseman. So let's hear from him right after he was drafted.
Really excited. You know, the feeling was unbelievable when I got my name called from in front of the home crowd.
Joining players like Crosby and Malkin, how does that make you feel? How do you think it will affect your game?
Yeah, of course, the best players in the world. It's a pretty good thing. And, I think it makes it easier if I can play with them.
You're joining Scott Arrington as well as another London Knight on the Pittsburgh Penguins. Was that kind of a team that you would have preferred to go to, you know, just because of Scott?
Well, we were making jokes about it like last year, and it happened now. So it's kind of funny. Yeah, we talked about it. It would be fun to play with him and put a pass with him. And he actually has called a lot. About the combine, what draft itself, and this year they come.
What did he tell you about the rookie camp? The Penguins rookie camp that you attended last year. What did he tell you about that?
We haven't talked about it yet. I think they're still coming up. He asked me about the combine and draft.
You guys are pretty close, right? Because he does give you advice and help you out. Has he kind of been like a mentor to you?
Yeah, he was one of the biggest reasons why my adjustment to London was so easy. He helped me a lot, helped me getting used to the game there and life there. Yeah.
So what do you think of the arena and the city? I mean, your impressions of what's going to be your home someday?
Yeah, well, you know, noise that loud in the trap. I can't believe what kind of is in the game. I won't be safe. I'm an all-around player, I consider myself more defensive, but still I consider myself offensive, and I believe I can play it. Yeah, I was looking forward to seeing him. Actually, I heard about him. I was kind of excited when he was kind of different and fast and different. And I think he was great. And I was excited to see how the crowd reacts. No, it's not. We won't have to my first five back here.
What do you think you need to work on to make the transition to the pros?
Well, obviously getting bigger and stronger, and I think just working my game, like overall game.
Yeah.
Well, how big were the Hunters in getting you to this point? Because you know, you came over, they welcomed you in, and obviously, you know, you progressed over the season.
Yeah, I've helped them a lot, and Will Brown is still, they helped me a lot, getting used to this game here and life here, and they gave me advices, and every day they talk about what it takes to make the NHL and what kind of players they want to be.
How much had you talked to the Penguins before? Like, how much interest do you think they had in you? Did you... You know, they talk to you a lot?
Yeah, I talked to them during the season and in the combine, of course.
Do you have any inclination to
think you know what? The draft class is so tight, you know. Every player would have to be picked from 3 to 30. You never knew who was going to pick yet. So it was pretty exciting day for me.
How about when you go back to the name, finally, you call if you ever back to the name?
No.
Were you getting nervous there as guys kept going up and they weren't calling your name? And does it come as a sense of relief a little bit when you do get called and you get to go to a team that's got as strong of a recent history as this?
Yeah, I was prepared for it. Like, you can go from 5 to whatever, because it's, as I said, the draft class is so tight, there's so much good D-man and players. But still, well, it gets a little nervous when you, every, like, from
see fake you wait when you get, when your name gets called, yeah, it gets you a little nervous. And when you heard your name, it's like, this is really...
And that was Olli Maatta of the London Knights, the Penguins' second first-round pick of the 2012 draft. A great kid, and I think that was, you know, aside from the Stahl trade and everything, it was really cool to see those guys. And Olli in particular, he was really, really happy. You could tell he was really fired up.
Oh, he was beaming, man. Penguins.
I mean, you could hear him on that audio. I mean, he was just laughing about everything, just having a good time with the media, and that was one of the best parts for me about the draft. It was just a really
he couldn't
cool,
stop smiling.
I know. He was just smiling the whole time.
It was just so contagious, too.
I know. I mean, you couldn't help but, you know, be happy for them. And not even just the Penguin picks. I mean, all the guys. You're just really happy for all of them. So congratulations to all of them, all the picks. Very well deserved, and I'm sure they had a great day. And I think it was cool that it's just kind of funny. After the second day of the draft, some of the guys were literally in the lobby at the Consol Energy Center, just, you know, taking pictures with fans and stuff and leaving with their families. And it's kind of like, kind of just brings you back to your childhood where, you know, you're walking out of the building with your family and your hockey jersey and everything. And it was just a pretty cool event to have in Pittsburgh. So really cool to have, really, really cool to see and kind of be a part of that and to see those guys have their special days there.
And if you play for Philly, they apparently get booed.
Yeah, that's true, too.
So lame.
Yeah.
That was awful.
I didn't necessarily agree with that part.
I mean, if you want to boo Holmgren, by all means, don't boo the poor kid.
Yeah.
I don't think
they booed the kid. They were just booing Philadelphia in general.
So, it's like one of the biggest moments in your life, and you get to walk up to the stage. Who are the boos? It's not his fault that they picked him.
Yeah, that's true. He has no control.
I don't think they booed so much after the name. I think they booed as soon as they said, next up on the clock, the Philadelphia Flyers. Then the boos rained down. It wasn't like, next pick for the Flyers, Sean Couturier, boo. it's a little different, really. No, I mean,
I know.
I don't know any of their draft picks, but yeah.
Yeah,
I think it was more so directed at them than anything.
Yeah.
Hey, booze.
What? Well, we got about a little over 2 minutes. So if you'd like to call in real quick, number 347-202-0344. We will be going all week this week because you never know. You never know what kind of news is going to come out. Ray Shiro was actually on the Fan today? And said that he's not actively shopping Paul Martin. He is getting calls about Paul Martin, but I think Paul Martin's future is going to depend on what happens on July 1st. And I think they're obviously going to have to wait until then, because if they get Ryan Suter, there's probably, well, you know, they may be able to pull it off, but I think there's a chance that Paul Martin may leave if Ryan Suter is signed on Sunday. If not, then maybe you do have to keep him because, you know, you just can't keep trading NHL defensemen if you can't. I mean, I'm sure they could get somebody else, but Ray Shiro seems to be somewhat confident that he can have a rebound season in 2012-2013.
Who would have thought that the last time we watched the Pittsburgh Penguins play the Flyers, it'd be the last time we saw Jordan Staal and possibly Paul Martin in a Penguins uniform?
Who knows?
We all thought it would be Aaron Ashram.
Yeah, Ashram's another guy we'll be looking at on thepensnation.com here in a couple days. Just profiling.
Don't want him back.
Yeah.
No, I'm good. Sorry,
somebody get Joe a Ricola.
RC Cola. But got about 30 seconds left, so we'll be back on the air tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. Once again, may have some guests on. We'll see what happens. Just keep following us on Twitter. That's where we'll be posting the guests and the times and everything like that. And thank you for listening tonight.
We should get Joffrey Loophole on.
Yeah, we could if you like. But thanks everyone for joining us tonight. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you tomorrow night.
Line or traffic?